It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HRs, recruiters, and one actor as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. Jeremy, this week we're going to be talking about finding your authentic voice as a new manager and defining your personal brand. So I know you have some stuff you want to take us through to start with, so let's go over to you.
Excuse me. Yeah, just a couple fill-in-the-blank sentences that can be helpful when you're starting your day. That can really help anyone. And it's almost kind of like creating these guideposts for us throughout the day. And everyone, Tom's going to play a big part in today as well, especially with his experience as an actor and as a presentation, a voice, a speech coach to everyone from line level employees to CEOs. Our topic today, Tom, I don't know if you just said this or not. I can't remember. Finding your authentic voice as a new manager, defining your personal brand is the topic today. And our theme for this month, April 24, is Leading with Purpose, Strategies for First-Time Managers. As a reminder, if you're listening to the podcast and if you're here today, these are open mic. Feel free to join us on the events. You can go to cboc.com/events and get your free tickets. And if you're here today or come in the future, they're open mic. Raise your hand. We call on you and you get to share your insights and be on the podcast. And of course, there's tons and tons of other events and networking opportunities on the site as well. So starting out with our topic today, this is something I created years and years and years ago. And as the years go on, this is probably, oh my gosh, probably 6 or 7 years ago. And I was just looking through my computer files. I just typed in personal brand and I was seeing what came up. Maybe I had something that I created earlier. And it's just really simple. I'll read them off. Starting out your day, you can do it on a note card. You can just write it because it'll change from time to time. But very simply, just my personal brand is blank. And remember, our brand is really our reputation. It's what people, how people perceive us. And it's sometimes, you know, some people say your reputation is what people say behind your back. The next fill in the blank is today I will challenge my assumption that, and this is for insight. This is to challenge our assumptions so that we can grow. And that also so that we can be better for other people because we might have assumptions about other people or other situations. So that is a good perspective taking exercise. The next one is today I will be helpful to blank by doing blank. This person will appreciate this because this is what they want and not what I want. And this can be helpful for new managers too as you're starting to navigate the who's who of organizations where you decide to do things and look through their perspective and their lens. This doesn't mean that you become a yes man or yes woman. It really means doing something that will be helpful to build that trust, that rapport, and that relationship. The next one is, by the end of the day, I will express appreciation to blank by physically saying blank and doing blank, which is really about helping other people realize, hey, I noticed these things. I'm using my soft skills and I want to appreciate you, even if it's for something small. Sometimes the smaller things are the things that make a big difference. And again, it's kind of like that management by walking around. It's making sure that you're in touch with your peeps, right? There was somebody I was coaching yesterday who is in a management position and just got looked over for a promotion that was expected. And with the manager title, it's one of those, I think we talked about this last week, where you can have a manager title, but you don't have any employees under you. So you don't have any that true management responsibility. It's kind of manager by title only. And this person was asked to be on a basically a committee that had some junior people on there, and his role was really to be a mentor and to help these juniors get up to speed. And it really became the conversation of probably a good idea to think of these people as your direct reports and really get to know them. One of the goals at the end of the session was get them to buy you lunch, meaning how can you be such an advocate for them, be so concerned about their growth that they want to reciprocate that. And it's not, the goal isn't actually to have them buy you lunch, but that's kind of like the end thing in mind is what can I do to really get to know this person and express appreciation? So that's a good one too. The next one is, and this is again, a perception activity. I used to see person or situation as blank, but now I see person or situation as blank. And we've talked about this before. It's usually giving that person or the situation the biggest benefit of the doubt that likely isn't true. This is a self-perception exercise and sets us up for success when dealing with potentially challenging situations or people. And today I'm working with the following change agent who is blank. And that's all about, especially if you're a new manager, identifying who are the change agents, who's looking for more, and who can I either take under my wing, really take together as that purposeful partner in helping me along and almost as a learning partner simultaneously, so that it's kind of like the two heads are better than one, so that you have someone who can help you and you have someone that you can help who's kind of chomping at the bit just for a little more. It's identifying those people who are ready for more, and your leadership as a new manager can help develop them. And Tom, you've got these really good examples in terms of not just how the voice is used, but really looking at how we can perceive other people. In the past, you've used who would this be if this person was a family member? How would you talk to that family member, and how would you engage them? And when we talk about finding an authentic voice as a new manager, and really with this personal brand, you're going to grow, and you're not. It doesn't mean leave your true self behind, but it means really stepping into the person that you want to be and being seen as the person you want to be, and really working on that that perception and your reputation. So it's about visioning out how that should look. And it's almost like if you vision out, like, you know, 5 years from now, and you're walking past a conference room and you hear people talking about you, what do you want them to be saying? And that can help us kind of outline things and put things into better perspective. So Tom, what advice or what questions would you have someone ask themselves when they're finding their authentic voice? They're a new manager, they're going through these changes, they might have imposter syndrome, they might not know the who's who, they might have little political capital. What do you say?
Well, one of the key things is to really know who you are and to stop judging yourself. Especially with the imposter syndrome, people are feeling like, geez, I'm just not enough. The truth is, yes, you are. And it's like any actor who wants to step onto the stage, who aren't feeling that maybe they've got the skills to be out there. Well, trust in yourself, you know, embrace the training that you've had, go out there with confidence, and you will be amazed at what happens. But, you know, maybe we've got to start about talking about, are you enough, and getting past the notion of judgment, not only for yourself, but, you know, it's always great to take feedback to get better, but there's a lot of judgment out there that, quite frankly, you know, you don't need to deal with. You know, why are you allowing someone else to throw their garbage in your backyard, and just having that confidence in yourself?
Tom, you mentioned acting. I was thinking about this earlier today. So you're a new manager. You're going to act and behave in ways that are expected, right, in certain situations, because we're talking about social norms. So you're part of it is acting. It's not like you're being disingenuous. You're really just stepping up to the task. Now I was thinking about this. When an actor plays a role that they don't have any experience with, that particular role, you know, or maybe they're playing the bad guy and they're just not the bad guy naturally. Is there really a part of them? How do I say this? Are they not just acting out a character? Is any acting person always drawing at least a little bit from inside their true self that comes out even in a character that they're not playing or a character that is contrary to even values or knowledge base?
Well, interesting question, Jeremy. and as a lot of you know, Jeremy and I have known each other for, I think, about 4 years now. And we have lots of discussions about things like this where I go, this is my acting perspective, but how does that work psychologically? And I'm very much from the school of acting where there is no character. You're always playing yourself. I just did a show where I played a 60-year-old farmer who's a playboy. I grew up on a farm, but I haven't lived on a farm in over 40 years, and I ain't exactly a playboy. But here I was playing this role. Could I be a playboy? Yeah, there's a side of me that would like to be a bit of a playboy. I don't act on it, which has left me in a lot of situations now where a lot of local women are coming up to me and wondering if that line I say in the play, if you want your toes to curl, spend a night with Earl, you know, if that's really true. And I'm like, you're never going to find out. So there's always a part. I mean, we are playing aspects of ourselves. It doesn't mean that, because yes, I have played evil characters. I would like to think of myself as not evil, but yeah, you know what? If I look down in those deep, dark corners, I can find that character. So for someone who's just become a manager, you know, and all of a sudden they have to act in a certain way, well, chances are that there may be choices of the way you are acting, the way you're perceived, that you have maybe fostered, you want to be seen as a nice person, but now you have to assume another role, just like an actor. And so you need to embrace those characteristics and find that in yourself, because that's where you're going to find authenticity. Now that I do, Jeremy.
This is great because it's kind of touching on, it's touching on the practical, but also the philosophical. And it got me entirely curious about this. What about, this comes up and I thought, you know, we talk about this, are we talking about it too much? And it's the whole thing of people getting promoted because they're a good SME. They're good at their task, but they're not good at managing people and they have a hard time letting go. Yep. But I noticed this more and more with people in the C-suite where they're getting feedback from their higher ups and even from the board sometimes that they need to let go a little bit and really focus on that leading and that delegating. So it's not like it doesn't necessarily get easier the higher you go up, especially if you work in your role in an organization is highly technical as you're going up. So we have this, you know, we talk about cognitive dissonance and we talk about things that are contrary to one's personality. And that, again, we go back to the acting part. How does someone, because the important part too is you don't want to let work get the best of you. You don't want a potentially toxic organizational culture get the best of you where you start to fall in line. How does an actor personally, mentally deal with playing a role that's against maybe a value? That's my question, I think.
Well, and it's a really interesting question because it gets into empathy, you know, and seeing other people's points of view. And today we live in a world where, you know, most of society is shut down. We refuse to see anyone's point of view. But as an actor, you know, you're playing someone who is highly against your values and morals. And you have to accept that, A, you know, there are people like this in the world, and that maybe if I had been brought up and raised in a different situation, I might be one of those people. So we all are an open book when we start, you know, a fresh page one, and then the script and story gets written. And that has a lot of perception on who we are. And even things like the way we use our voices, the sound of our voices, everybody has some sort of dialect or accent. There's not a lot of people like myself who have been trained to a standard in voice and speech. So what I speak is what might be classified as the North American standard dialect. And there's no real sort of true dialect. These are all made up by people like me who are in film and theater because we want a general norm. But all of those things are going to affect and influence your voice. And not only will you as a person be showing in your life the traits that you experienced from your parents, you know, how they raised you, those morals, those values. But more than likely, you're going to sound like one of your parents as well, because we mimic to learn to speak. And if, for example, you've got parents who are nasal, chances are you're going to be a nasal speaker. And there's some links, you know, I put in the chat, and some of those are will lead you to research articles. Others are just propaganda for companies that want to sell you their skills, but they've got some interesting information. But really, you know, if I took all of their advice and really sort of, you know, went down that path and got all those skills, spent thousands of dollars training with them, but this was my voice, how effective as a leader am I going to be with nasality? And that's sort of things that a lot of people don't talk about. You need to talk to somebody like me who's involved in something like the arts and works on the voice.
So it is more, it's more about kind of shaving off some of the what might be rough or not rough enough edges, and really about active monitoring of how you're interacting and how you're being perceived without losing yourself in the process.
It's really about discovering yourself. I'm a Linklater practitioner, so I follow the work of Kristen Linklater. And one of the things that she puts out is that unless you have some sort of physical abnormality in your vocal tract, that everybody has a wonderful voice. It's just that nobody ever trained you how to use it. So, you know, going back to that nasality issue, you know, this is my voice with nasality, not exactly pleasant. And it has this interesting psychological effect that, you know, the more I use this voice because it's kind of grating, the more and more annoyed you're going to get with me as a speaker. So if you can actually get your voice working the way it's naturally, discovering the natural voice and use that voice, because this is my natural voice. This wasn't the voice I started out as with an actor. When I started out, you know, I was about 18 years old. I was taking some professional acting classes. I was quite nasal, and I spoke in a higher tone. I talked really too fast, and I had really bad articulation. So I say things like, you know, me and Dan are going to jump in the old pickup truck around the creek there, pick up the collie, don't come out of the house. Now, if you were born and raised on a farm, you might have actually understood what I was saying. But I had the experience one night of, you know, in a class, getting up, doing my monologue, and the room being silent when I finished. I look at the instructor and notice that everybody else is looking at him. He stands up, he walks up the three stairs onto the stage, looks me dead in the eye, and then turns to the rest of the class and goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Bradshaw, a very gifted young actor. But when he opens his mouth, you can't understand a word he says." And I had to realize that if I want to be an actor, I needed to learn how to speak. And I was upset, because this is my voice. This is the way I speak. Most of my friends understand me most of the time. Yeah, I might have to repeat myself because people are going, "What'd you say?" But as a leader, as someone, especially if you're just moving into a leadership position, you got to have a good voice. And it's not that hard. None of this is rocket science. It's like if you decided that, you know, you're out of shape and you need to go to a gym and work out to improve your overall look. Because remember, when you're standing up in front of an audience, it's not just about your voice. It's about your body language. It's about the way you present. But if people are willing to go to a gymnasium to get their body into better shape, then spend some time working with a vocal coach to get your voice in shape.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to turn it back over in a second to call on some of the audience. And it really is about, how do we present our passion and how do we present our emotions, especially in the tough situations? And working on the voice and how we communicate what we're thinking and what we're feeling at the same time, but in an effective manner, that matters to your superiors as a new manager, so yeah, to your work group. Tom, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jeremy, because you're just starting to get into the emotions. Should I be emotional when I speak? And you know, the old adage was, don't show your emotions, especially if you're in the C-suite. Never let them see you sweat. You know, don't go there. But that's totally wrong, especially in the world of today. And this happened. This is one of my very first clients about 25, 30 years ago. He was a professional speaker. He was a leadership coach, and he would do presentations. And we started to talk about story and how he needed to share more of his own personal stories. And he went, yeah, but if I do that, I'm going to get emotional. And I went, good, watch what happens. And he just happened to be videotaping that presentation. And it was incredibly interesting to watch, because at one point he took a chair and sat down in front of the audience. And he went, I want to tell you a story. I might get a little bit emotional. And as he started to tell the story, as he started to get emotional, you could see the people in the front row leaning forward. They were so into it, they actually wanted to get closer to him. So as you well know, Jeremy, showing your emotions, and especially for an actor, that's what it's all about. That is our trade in stock. And you can connect empathetically with your audience, whether it's a group of people or individual, if you're willing to share your emotions with them. Jeremy shaking his head up and down. All right, lots of hands up. Thank you for your patience. Lee, let's go to you.
Wow. You know, I just have to say, Tom, that I really enjoyed that presentation. No. You know, it's interesting because, you know, as Tom and I have had opportunity to talk in the past about my limited acting experience and the way you go into those roles, you know, and you see it on TV, like, what is my motivation, you know, or whatever. And, you know, I totally agree with what he said about every time you play a role, there's a little bit of you in that role. And you have to look at it as, okay, if this were me, you know, if I were to live this, what does that look like? And, you know, and as, you know, I'm sure Tom can tell you, you know, actors spend a lot of time just in the preparation for who they are going to interpret that person as, not even counting their lines. And you know, I dare say that that's the same thing that we should do in our professional lives, because we all play roles in our lives. I mean, whether it's a role as a parent, as a spouse or significant other, you know, a friend, a child, you know, whatever that is, we're a little bit different in each of those contexts because that is a different role that we play. Not that we're being inauthentic, not that we're making stuff up, but that is just the cast of characters. I mean, like the Bard said, you know, the world is a stage and we're just player, you know, actors. And so you have to really consider, you know, if you're going into that new role, whatever that is, whether it's supervisor or not, if you're going into a new role, it's just like that acting spot. What is this? And how do I want to interpret that? And then you, when you really do that mental exercise and you work your way into what I want to do, is, you know, it also helps you with the imposter syndrome, because I'm not playing someone else. I'm playing myself. You know, this role, you know, me as me. And so you go in and you go, okay, so what do I envision this as? You know, like for me as a supervisor and manager, I look back at the examples I've had, both the good ones and the good examples of bad examples. And I define that, what do I want to be based on the experience that I've had and what I've observed? And I take that part of me that's going to be the central part of this role, and I apply those lessons to that, going, this is the picture that I want to see and that I want to portray out to the others. And, you know, and of course, if you succeed, then you know, like, you know, whoever was it said, you know, I think it was Tom that said about getting them to buy you lunch, you know, and if you're doing a good job, it actually a little uncomfortable, honestly, because like there are times that one of my employees will tell me that they really enjoy working for me or whatever else. And that's not why I do it. And it's almost like it's not really me. It's the whole team, you know, and you have to, you know, there's a balancing act there with, you know, being, you know, keeping some humility and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it does take a lot of self-reflection, and it does take a lot of, you know, stepping away from that imposter. I am not playing someone else. I am playing as myself in this role, but I have to interpret that role in the way that I want it to go. And you have that choice. I mean, yeah, there's outside factors and whatever else, but we still get to play that part, and we get to interpret that how we want. And in many ways, you have to ignore the critics, you know, because, you know, I had somebody tell me one time that other people's opinion of me is none of my business. So to an extent, I believe that. I mean, yeah, I mean, your employee's opinion is kind of important, but in your boss's opinion is kind of important. But there are some others out there that, you know, the naysayers, the haters, whatever else, You know, and I heard that, you know, a hater is really just a fan that doesn't understand why you're so, you know, good or popular or whatever. And so it's all framing. And you know, when you change the lighting in your brain, just like changing the lighting on a stage, the shadows move. You know, the emphasis is different. And you can do that just through some simple mental exercises. And you can do cool things like get a speech coach like, you know, Mr. Tom Bradshaw, or work with a career coach like so many of the people that are on my screen right now. You know, you don't have to go this alone.
That mindset gives you incredible power, you know, to be yourself. And, you know, as I was saying, some of those links are for organizations that charge a lot of money. And for anybody who's listening to the Work Cookie podcast, there's a whole panel of people here who could give you the same advice, even better advice. And you get that if, you know, if you're a member, you get those free monthly sessions. So consider that as well. And since you spoke, Lee, you know, I do want to point out something about, you know, accents and dialects. And Lee, you probably think that all the rest of us have an accent, but you don't. But here's the thing. And it doesn't matter if it's an accent, a dialect, or if you just have bad speech. If people can't understand you, people can't understand you. And that is an issue with leadership. So you want to make sure that you have clear speech, which is not a difficult thing to master. There's about 44 sounds in our 26-letter alphabet. There's about 44 sounds that you need to sort of master. There's a few other sounds that if you want to sound like you're highly educated, that you can put into your usage of your voice. And that will help a lot. But Lee has a wonderful accent, and accents actually draw our focus and attention in. I want to listen to Lee all the time with that accent. But his speech is clear. I don't ever have a problem understanding what Lee is saying. So kudos to you, Lee. And let's go to Nick.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's, you know, your experience as an actor is a wealth of knowledge and things like that. But relating it to new managers, It is. You take the word role, whether that be a role in a play or a role in an organization, and you do have to prepare for that role. You have to make the decisions about how am I going to speak people? How do I convey, you know, what I want to be in this position? And I just, as I'm thinking about it, you know, it is making sort of that character, which is counterintuitive to what everybody's saying about bring your authentic self to work. But if that character is your character that you're bringing to the new role, the parallel works very, very well. My question is, you know, how do you help a young manager who maybe thought they wanted to do it one way, and now all of a sudden they've got to change the way that they're doing it due to feedback or due to just saying, well, this isn't how I want to come across. I don't want to be the authoritarian. I want to be the caretaker. And what ways do I have to modulate my communication and my style to convey that to the people around me?
Really great question. And there's sort of going to be two phases here. So, you know, as an actor, I could be working on a show and a director says to me in rehearsal, yeah, that's not the character I want to see. I want the character to, you know, not be so critical, to be less judgmental. And so once again, I have to search back in my own personality and find those traits and start to foster and develop those. But at the same time, there are some vocal traits which can have your perception as rather negative. So for example, I was working with someone many years ago who was a manager in a department store. And she was like the best boss. Everyone loved her. And then all of a sudden, employees started going to her boss going, I don't know what's going on with her, but she's becoming, you know, snippy. She's becoming much more critical. And she had no idea that she was doing any of this. But when we started to chat, I discovered that she was going through some personal issues and she was suffering from a lot of stress and tension. And there's a really interesting thing that happens. A lot of people hold that stress and tension in their sternum. And the voice is not just the vocal box. The voice is the entire body. Think of it like the Stradivarius violin. You know, the musician plays the strings, but it's the way that the sound reverberates in the wood that gives the Stradivarius that unique, wonderful sound. You know, use a cheaper violin, you won't get the same sound. So it's the same thing with our bodies. Our entire bodies should be resonating when we speak. There should be vibration. One of my instructors in voice and speech would do this little experiment where he would sit on the floor and he would hum. And then he would invite each one of us to put a finger on his sole, on the sole of his foot, and you could vibrate. So you do want your whole body resonating when you're speaking. And what had happened to this individual is she had collected so much stress and tension in her sternum that the sternum wasn't vibrating anymore. And it started to affect the way she spoke, and things were shorter and crisper and became to sound, start to sound much more critical, even though she was saying the exact same things that she'd been saying to her employees, you know, ever since she started. So there are some of that personality traits where, like, just like an actor, sometimes you have to adapt the role, and you once again have to find those roles in yourself. And we're all authentic. You know, it's just the, we can be authentic in many different ways. You know, the, a lot of people, when they talk about voice, they'll talk about the customer service voice, that pleasant smiley voice, which I'm not sure works anymore, because I think more and more customers just see right through it. And I think you're actually better just sticking with that authentic voice. We could also talk about tone of voice. It's not fair to women, but a deeper, richer tone does have the perception of more confidence. Now, for women, you do have a lower register, and it is not so much about forcing the voice down, because, you know, just trying to sound like you've got a deeper voice, because that can actually damage your voice. And here's the trick that I always use, because people will go, you have a wonderful bass baritone voice. Well, my voice isn't actually as deep as you think it is. I'm using chest reverberation to enhance the darker, deeper tones. So it does give my voice a richer, deeper sound. And women can do the same thing just speaking in their vocal range. So there you go. Hopefully I answered that question. Dr. Matthew, let's go to you.
A couple thoughts there for a second. One, to Nick's question, kudos to those individuals who care enough to be open to that feedback, to listen to what others are sharing for ways to develop and get better with that personal development. So first and foremost, kudos to them. And Tom, what you were just talking about with that manager and the sudden change in the feedback, it's amazing the power of nonverbal communication, or subtle things that we're not necessarily aware of, the way that we can bring ourselves to work or to the office or to a team, how things outside can influence that, whether we recognize it or not. The people around us are going to recognize it because something's off, something's different. And that speaks a little bit to what was mentioned in the chats about that vulnerability piece and being authentic to yourself. Tom, you talked about it as well, being able to open yourself up a little bit to explore who your authentic self is. And you talked earlier about how we mimic our parents with certain dialects or speaking patterns. And a lot of us here, I would think, would argue is a similar pattern or similar behavior in organizations. We mimic the leaders that we've seen, the good or the not so good. And so for those new leaders that are out there trying to find their authentic brand, trying to find their authentic management style, to echo what Lee said, there's really a lot of that reflection. How do I want to show up? Who do I want to be? And what impression do I want to have? When I think about my past managers, what do I want to say? Then flip that. What might my people that I'm now leading, what might they say? What might they tell their friends and their family? You want to really know the impact of a manager? Ask the family members who sit around the dinner table, who listen to somebody say, here's how my manager impacted me today. Could be good or could be not. And, you know, the primary task of for new managers, in my opinion, new managers and new leaders, your primary task is to really get to know your team. There's reasons why you were put in that position, whether it's skill or knowledge or expertise, but there's a whole other element of really knowing your people. And that's going to help you get to know yourself as well. The tasks and the projects, they'll continue. And you can get into those aspects later, managing all the fine details, but your primary intention, your first focus is really on your people. Who are they and how do they interact? What are their goals? What motivates them? And how do you want to, what kind of a leader do you want to be for them? So there's a lot of that reflection piece. And again, looking back at what you've had and what you liked and didn't like, finding ways to fix that and being open to that feedback. It's going to be tough sometimes. That guy's going to come up, like you said, on stage and talk to you. It's going to hurt, How do you use that? Do you use it to say, you know what, this isn't for me, I'm going to go back to being a producer? Okay, that's fine. Or do you lean into it and say, tell me more? How do I get better?
Yeah, you know, and you're absolutely right, Dr. Matthew. And we as a group here sometimes, I think, have to, you know, take a step back at times, because I think everybody knows how to breathe as a voice and speech coach. And then I'm shocked to find out that 80% of the population doesn't actually breathe right for speech. So I have to remind myself sometimes of the simple things. And so, you know, as a group, we can talk about taking the path to being authentic. And we can say things like, it's not easy at times, because the truth is, it's a hard journey for a lot of people. But, you know, once again, hire an IO psychologist, because you guys are trained to help people along that path. So, you know, it's, you know, once again, going back to the gym, if you really want to find that voice of a leader, if you want to find that authentic voice, you know, if you want to be true and speak your truth, it is a hard path to go down. And an IO psychologist can help you navigate that path. And the bonus, once you get to the end, is once you really sort of stop caring about what other people think and say, not that you're not open to feedback, but once you've sort of taken the stain of judgment away, it gives you such freedom and such power to be who you truly are. So, you know, once again, call an IO psychologist. Dr. Martha, good to see you again. Let's go to you.
What an interesting conversation. I laughed, I cried, and I can tell you with certainty that I don't know if I'll be able to keep a straight face the next time I meet an Earl. Thanks, Tom. And apparently Lee has been reading my mind today, so I'll just skip over a lot of what I was going to say because Lee took care of that. But one thing that I do want to say is that when people are new to management, they're not all the same. You may be new to management, but also fairly new to the workforce. Or you may have worked for the last 20 years, but now you've been introduced to the role of managing with or without any training. We've talked about this quite a bit, that oftentimes just because somebody's been with a company long enough, or just because they've been in the industry long enough, they get promoted to being a manager and they are kind of thrown or pushed into the deep end of the pool without any real training in terms of how to manage. A person may be new to management because they were out of the workforce for a while. Maybe they were taking care of family. Maybe they switched careers altogether. And even though you have a management role, you're brand new to everything. So this is so interesting to consider that it may be hard enough to establish that brand and build that image of who you are as a manager. And everyone has that baggage, and many people have that imposter syndrome. But I want to remind everyone that regardless of where you were before this, there is value in all of your experience, whether your experience is you just are coming out of school a few years, or you were out of work because you were taking care of family, or you've been in it for the last 20 years. There are things that you bring with you that you can contribute. Even things such as your own experiences working for a manager who you liked or didn't like, who you respected or didn't respect. Those are all learning opportunities for you that you can then embrace and utilize in building your brand, figuring out who you want to be. So that's my two cents. Lee said everything else.
Well, next time we'll make sure you go first. but it's absolutely true what you're saying. Yeah, I am a good actor at 60 because of everything I've experienced in my life. You know, and there have been some really hard times, you know, personally, financially, but those have all made me a much richer and deeper person. I've got experiences, some that I don't want to repeat ever again in my life, but I've had those experiences and I can talk authentically about that. I can share that experience as an actor authentically because I've actually experienced it. Have I experienced everything in the world? Well, no. You know, I've never killed somebody. but maybe one day I get cast as somebody who kills somebody. And I don't want to go out and actually experience that. But, you know, there are ways to get that same sort of feeling. So, you know, everything you've experienced, and, you know, if you've been working for 20 years and all of a sudden you're a manager, just think of the wealth and depth of things that you've experienced that now you can share with those more than likely younger employees that you're now mentoring. So thank you very much for that, Dr. Martha. Rich, good to see you again. Let's go to you.
Tom, you keep saying hire an IO, and I'm going to say hire an actor or hire a musician or somebody or a singer, because they assume leadership positions from the very beginning. Right. My wife is a music teacher. My son is an actor. He's in a performance starting this weekend and going into next. They're in Tech Week right now. And the other two kids I have, they're in a musical next week. So, you know, I've seen actors as students. I've seen them as professionals, and they really assume different roles, like fluidly, you know, and the team dynamics within these, I've written about this, about, you know, I was in the band program, and it's a change management scenario every time you move from one season to another or from one show to another. Everybody has to learn how to work with each other, how to adapt, you know, and so the leadership, the balance of power changes all the time, but it's just done very fluidly. I mean, emotions are there, that all happens, but they learn how to do that in the workplace. So another thing about that is Adam Grant is always saying, you know, IO psychologist Adam Grant, look him up anyway, but he says, you know, learners are the best leaders, right? And we've heard that adage a lot. Are you kidding me? An actor has to learn an entire part, right? And then unlearn it to adapt to another part later on. It's just incredible to see that, and then to watch outside when they're not on the stage how they lead others. Off the stage as well. You know, it's just an amazing thing. So, you know, sure, hire an IO, but if you can find an IO that's an actor or a musician or a singer or an artist, boy, you've got something special there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rich. You know, I've played well over 100 different characters in my career, and I'm sure they've all been authentic. At least I hope so. And, you know, I've done summer stock where I've played different characters in different shows that are on stage different nights. And when it comes to leadership, I love directing big musicals because I get to work with a choral director, a musical director, a choreographer, you know, someone conducting the orchestra. And it's a great leadership opportunity because they're doing all the work. I just have to make sure that, you know, the boat is sailing in the right direction. So I love that. So thanks again, Rich. Gabby, let's go to you.
Hey there. I really like the conversation today. I think it really makes me think about the way we all speak, the way that we perceive everyone when we're interacting with each other. And I like that you keep mentioning like how uncomfortable and how it can really go wrong sometimes. While we're talking about this, I'm just thinking about like my very, very first managing or supervising position and how awful that was, you know, like how really truly when people are offered this positions, really they don't get to be trained and they're not given the skills. I know certainly I wasn't. And when I stepped into this position, I just thought people would continue to do what they were doing. And I didn't really have to do anything other than just get their clock in, say hi and get everybody their coffee and move on with their day. And quickly I realized that was not the case. So I'm thinking back about that experience and how really, it's really up to us, like as leaders, managers, supervisors, whatever we're doing, we really have to be intentional about how we want to step into those leadership positions. Are we doing it because we want to add it to our resume, or do we want to get more money? Like, what is the purpose and the mission behind this? And then are we okay with stepping into this role? And maybe, you know, like how you, everybody is saying, acting out of our values, or maybe stepping away a little bit from who we truly are to fulfill what we need to do. So I think it's something that we shouldn't take so lightly. And maybe when we're younger and we don't have a lot of experience, which is what Dr. Martha was saying, like we are exposed to these positions and we don't really understand the impact they can have on the people that we're working with. I mean, it's exciting and it's a good thing. And I was over the moon when somebody thought about me, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't prepared to do the job that they expected me to do, or their vision. I think they had an idea, the potential of what I could have been, but it wasn't what I was ready to do. So thank you. That's kind of where I was going back, like, wow, that's true. There's so much that, there's so many factors. And also thank you for that voice and stuff that you shared with us. That's super, super interesting.
Oh, you're very welcome. And, you know, it's interesting as well, because, you know, Jeremy, you and I have talked about this a number of times, but it's about doing speeches and presentations. And, you know, people don't get up on stage and speak with no purpose in mind. You know, usually at the end of your presentation, there's an ask. You want people to do something. Well, there's two ways of going at it. And one is them, you know, having them going, getting to the very end and doing your ask and people going, I don't know, you know, I guess if that person says I should be doing this, maybe I should give it a try. But you can use, you know, as Jeremy and I often say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. You can get people to a point that even before you get to the ask, you know, they're willing to do anything. And playing on people's emotions, oh, and this is the evil part of what I do, you know, you can manipulate people. I directed Legally Blonde the musical. And I spent almost a year working on the script before we even got to rehearsal. And I charted the emotional ride that I wanted the audience to take. I knew when they were going to laugh. I knew when they were going to cry. And to sit at the back of the house and watch the show and go 3, 2, 1, people were laughing, to go, here comes the tears, and to actually hear people sobbing in the audience. By the end of the show, you know, you get to the curtain call, the lights go down, and the audience is already standing, you know, giving a standing ovation. And that's the moment I realized, this is when I should have put a funding pitch in for the theater company, because I would have made lots of money for the company that night. So, you know, you can use your voice, you can use your presentation style. And, you know, if you're open and honest with your own emotions, you will be surprised at the effect to really motivate people to move forward. And as a leader, if you can motivate them emotionally that this is what they want to be doing, that they're part of the team, that, you know, we're all going to get to opening night together and we're going to get that standing ovation, you can do incredible things. Nick, let's go to you.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of kind of that back and forth of we're talking about acting, taking on the role, which often means pretending to be something you're not. And so the struggle I see in the chat is how do you balance that with the authentic message and the authentic voice? And I think as far as using the tools of voice and performance in work, it's deliberately taking a step back and thinking about how are you going to be presenting yourself in the public space? How are you going to be in that role? So it's really just taking a step back. And part of that is knowing your audience. You talked about the customer service voice earlier. I drive my wife crazy because I can be on the phone, I can be at a table, I can be, you know, crystal clear in my pronunciation, but I mumble when it's just her and I on the couch. And so, you know, different audience, different situation. And she gets mad because she knows I can, but I don't always with that environment. And on the other side of it, as you do climb in your career, there is more performative actions that are required. Somebody mentioned TikTok and how people are taking off with all of the social media, and they are getting up on stage and they are, you know, standing and delivering. And it's as much a part of anything as it is, particularly when you are trying to motivate or engage people. you are putting on a show. You know, it might be a work of short fiction, like a to-do list or anything like that, but it's there. And the young managers who want to improve their brand, it's really making the choices about the story you're going to tell to others about yourself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you also hit on something where, you know, if you want to promote yourself, you know, as an IO psychologist or in any profession, doing what we're doing right now is one of the most effective ways. People like Dr. Martha know this really well. She's got a podcast, she's doing videos, and it's the best way to promote yourself. You know, I've often said to, you know, the CEO of a company, I don't want you to hire a corporate spokesperson. I want you to be the voice of the company. The same way when I go into a hardware store, I want to actually deal with the owner of the hardware store. You know, I want that relationship with the person at the top. So if you're a CEO who can put a video on your website introducing yourself and your company and your values, that will go a long way to increasing your business. And for, you know, everyone who's on the panel who shows up weekly, this is probably one of the best ways to promote yourself. So, you know, being your authentic self and showing it to the rest of the world will serve you well. But I did want to push back a little bit with, you know, some of that chat. Actors always play their authentic self. You know, we find all of those characteristics, even the nasty ones, somewhere in our soul. We choose not to live that life in the real world because we like to have things like friends. But, you know, even when I am playing the worst person in the world in a show or a film, I have to find that in myself. And part of the strength that actors have is being willing to admit that, you know, we could be terrible, horrible people, but we choose to live a different type of life because we do believe in things like morals and values. Dr. Matthew, let's go back to you.
So Nick did a great job of answering that question that came up in the chat. I wanted to make sure that it did get mentioned. And to just build off of really quickly what you and he both said, it's that balance of the confidence in my ability to do the job or to fulfill that role, but also the humility to say, I don't know everything yet. I can be open to that feedback. And when you get that hard feedback, how do you use that? Do you use that? And if you do you use it to propel you forward? Tom, you mentioned that for those of us on this podcast, this is a great way to build our brand. It is. And I would also argue it's also a way to build some of our skills, build some of our knowledge, and be open to hearing different ideas, because we all bring different perspectives to our jobs and to our roles, but just to being ourselves. And so how do you balance that authentic and professional? It's a messy mix. It's a little bit of both, a little bit of that here, a little bit of this there, but really it's that reflecting back of who do I want to be and how do I want to show up? What parts of this aspect do I not like, but I know that it's there. And so how can I use it? How can I control how much I use that? And really just the meaning of your communication is the result you're getting. So whether it's verbal communication or nonverbal communication, the way that you present yourself is really... And being open to hearing how that is received is going to help you develop your skills and become more of your authentic self.
It sure is. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, it's not just the verbal, and we focus mainly on the verbal today. But, oh, my God, if you understand body language, you pick up so much when you're having conversations with people. you really see the truth. Alexander, nice to see you again. Let's go to you.
Nice to see you too, Tom. So this is such a fascinating topic, and I think it's important because we have such a change in management today. We have baby boomers who are exiting companies fully, and ownership is changing. We have a lot of Gen X that is coming into the workforce. We have millennials that are starting to enter mid or lower management, and even Gen Z is opening up into lower management as well. So we have a lot of unique aspects happening right now that's causing a lot of different generational differences and communication styles and working styles that are all happening on. And so it's something that I think is a really important topic, but it's also something that we have to be aware of how important it is to have our minds open to those other aspects. As you said, Tom, in the earliest part, a lot of us are closed off as a society right now. We're not having those openness to other perspectives and working situations that a lot of us have. It's something I say to a lot of managers right now is you have to remember that between ages 18 and 29, about 50% of your workforce is probably still living at home. That has really big changes for how they are going to be feeling about themselves, how they're going to be viewing management with others. A lot of them can still be in situations where they might have kind of oppressive or overbearing parents who are still kind of controlling them. And then they're expected to lead others and they still don't feel like they might have their own life into a spot where they can lead their own lives. And so it really is a spot where we have to be very mindful of the differences that are happening in the workplaces and outside of the workplace environments as well.
Absolutely true. And, you know, the voice is not something that, you know, at a certain age, that's what it is. It doesn't change. The voice is continually changing as we are, you know, for us males in the audience, we all probably went through a voice change somewhere in our early teens. It was very noticeable. Women also go through a voice change. It's much more subtle and usually happens later in the teen years. But the voice isn't fully developed for, you know, until you're into your 20s and 30s. And you can always then continue to develop it and develop, you know, the type of voice that people actually want to listen to. Because if you have one of those voices that just draws people's attention, it makes all this so much easier. So thank you very much for that, Alexander. Rohan, let's go to you. Welcome to Work Cookie. And then after Rohan, Jeremy, we'll bring it back to you. Hello, thanks, Rohan.
Thanks a lot. I'm going to jump off after this. But I think we've done a really good job of talking around this idea that I'm summing up as speak, not to have spoken, but rather to hear that you have been heard. And I'll say that again without stumbling over it. Speak, not to have spoken, but rather to hear that you have been heard. And I have a lot of experience in theater and stuff, in improv and storytelling and everything. I can't do the whole play. Like, the memorization is just not for me. But actors do the same thing, right? Like, we'll point with an entire hand instead of just one finger, so the person all the way in the back knows what's going on stage. And I came out of the military, where if you can think about military leadership, the first leader we meet is, we'll say, less than tolerant and very clear about what they want. And I had to adjust when I came out because, you know, the people I was talking to didn't share that experience. And, you know, me giving them feedback was really just a "you suck" session, right? And then their behavior wasn't changing. They just felt bad about themselves. And all I did was just get frustrated. And of course, as a leader, it's really my problem, not yours. So I had to essentially start to take into account, like, are they going to choose these words different? Or I'm sorry, are they going to receive these words differently? Or are they going to need me to say something like, "Yeah, you failed miserably, let's just own it, let's move on," versus, "Hey, good effort, you just fell short," or, like, you know, on the scale of zero to infinity, "You're in the exact same spot, but we need you somewhere else." So the example that came to mind recently was somebody had texted me some stuff and said a bunch of stuff that was, like, inaccurate. And I was like, "Okay, these are very important concerns. We need to meet and talk about it." And they were just upset, didn't want to meet up, and they were like, I've said what I have to say. And I'm like, "Okay, well, this is still important. We need to talk about it." And, you know, we came back later and they were like, "Well, yeah, you just told me I was wrong. You didn't tell me," like, you know, they wanted to hear the words, "I'm sorry you feel that way," which to me is the all-American non-apology of, "You are absolutely correct, deal with it." But they're international. So, like, for them, that conveyed the empathy they wanted to hear. Whereas I said, "These are valid." To me, that was a validation. So I now know when I deal with this person, "Hey, I'm sorry you feel that way" doesn't carry the weight it does here in America. So that's all. I'm going to jump off shortly, but I really appreciate it. Thanks for letting me speak. And you guys are doing great work.
Thank you very much, Rohan. And it's great to have another actor here. And now I can start to go, and two actors. And, you know, you're absolutely right on a lot of the things you're saying there. And it's a journey that we all have to take. And, you know, you learn and you get better. You just have to keep playing the game and getting in the effort. Jeremy, once again, an hour has gone by. Today it seemed like 2 minutes. I didn't even get to all the other stuff that I wanted to talk about. But thank you, everyone who contributed today, because you guys are the real stars. You guys are the ones who keep the show going with your added comments and really does make Work Cookie what it is. So, Jeremy, back to you.
Yeah, this is amazing, Tom. I think we need to give you an entire monthly theme. We have 11 events I won't name them all up until the end of this month. I want to do a special call out to if you're an IO student or grad student in IO psychology or applied psychology, we have biweekly meetups. And Gabby Cadena, which spoke earlier here today, is doing a fantastic job of getting a lineup. So we've got a lineup up until I think July of some really fantastic individuals there. But please join us if you can for any of the events. And a reminder, Lee Crossland's virtual IO psychology mixer is tonight at 6:30. And you can either just follow him on LinkedIn, which many of you, probably all of you already do anyway, or check out the cboc.com/events to find out how to get to that. Looking forward to seeing everybody next week. Thank you for another great show. Counting out in 5, 4. You have something, Tom?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, to everyone who's listening, especially on the Work Cookie podcast, join CBOC. You get access to all of these great information. And if you join up, you get to talk to people like me for no charge once a month. And you can access everybody who spoke up today. Work on your voice, work on your IO skills, get great advice on how to advance your career. Join CBOC.
Yeah, we do have a really fantastic lineup of just a lot of excellent people with a completely diverse background of, and we've tried to think of everything in terms of your IO psychology career. And if you're a business looking for some support, some coaching, IO psychology consulting, get in touch with us as well. Tom, thanks for the plug. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Jeremy.
Counting out in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at cboc.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At cboc.com.